Welcome to X-Men Unraveled. I'm your host, Noelle, and I cover the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. Today's episode is a week late because I got the flu. It was not a fun time, and I could barely speak without coughing, which is not really conducive to making a podcast, but I'm all recovered now, and just consider this your reminder to get your flu shot if you haven't already. Trust me, you do not want what I went through. Today we are meeting a brand new character in Uncanny X-Men number 10, Kazar. If you aren't familiar with him, he's a Tarzan-like man who lives in the Savage Land. More on that later. Normally, I start with the background and history of a new character before diving into the issue, but for this one, it felt like it made more sense to cover it the other way around. We don't really learn much about Kazar or the Savage Land itself in the issue, because the X-Men don't gain a lot of knowledge about either while they are there. So first we'll follow along with their adventure, and then I'll get into more about Kazar's history and what exactly the Savage Land is and how it came to be. Today's issue is Uncanny X-Men number 10 from 1965. On the cover, we see a blonde man in what appears to be a fur loincloth and boots reminiscent of Tarzan. We've got a tagline, "Introducing Kazar, Lord of the Jungle," and the X-Men are all around him in a fight. And then down in the left corner, there's a little inset picture of a saber-toothed tiger with the name Zabu. So based on the cover alone, we've got a pretty interesting issue. Page one, as per usual, continues the excitement and says that the issue features a fascinating journey to the world that time forgot, with another picture of Kazar alongside Zabu and the X-Men. There's also a little pronunciation guide to Kazar's name that says it's Kazar with an S, but I will continue to pronounce it Kazar because it's spelled with a Z and that's just how I always read it in my head. So my apologies if I'm disregarding the guide. The issue opens up, as most of these early ones do, with the team in the danger room. Jean has just taken apart a rifle piece by piece with her telekinesis and is holding it all in the air. Scott and Bobby praise her, and then we of course get the internal monologue of Jean and Scott pining after each other. Then Jean puts the whole thing back together to more praise and more longing between her and Scott. But just then, the team realizes that Warren has been missing from their training, and they all run off to look for him. It's kind of sad, like they've been in there for a little while, and they just notice that he's not there. They find Warren sitting in front of the TV watching a news report about an incident in Antarctica. A group of explorers were there, and one of them ended up getting lost. No one had been able to find him, and they were starting to assume the worst, until a man dressed only in a loincloth arrived and carries the explorer back to his colleagues. With the mysterious man is a saber-toothed tiger, which startled the rest of the explorers, and a fight breaks out. Luckily, everyone escapes unscathed, but the man and the saber-toothed tiger disappear. The X-Men watch this together, and they're all discussing the odd report, and they come to the conclusion that the loincloth man must be a mutant. How else could he survive the freezing temperature without warm clothing? Which, honestly, it's a fair assumption. So they rush off to Professor Xavier's office. He's back now, unfortunately, after their fight with Lucifer last issue. But Xavier informs the team that he's already aware of the incident because Washington contacted him. Remember, early on, he had been working with an FBI agent to find mutants. But he reveals that he's already determined that the mystery man is not a mutant. The X-Men, though, still want to go investigate. Scott asks Xavier to let them go because they haven't really done anything except train for several weeks now. And Xavier agrees, so the X-Men are all ecstatic and start their preparation to depart, with Xavier remaining behind. I personally would not ask to go to Antarctica. I'd be like, okay, fine, he's not a mutant. Any mutants in, say, a beach town? But that's just me. The X-Men are thrilled to be going. The team flies to Antarctica and then load up in some sort of big all-terrain vehicle with tank treads and make their way to the last known location of the man from the news report. But when they arrive, they only find a giant crevasse in the area. Scott uses his optic beam to try and see how deep the hole goes. They aren't able to see, but the blast ends up pushing a bunch of snow from up below the ground and opens up a tunnel. The X-Men head inside, assuming that it must be how the man disappeared. As they head through the tunnel, the temperature starts to increase and they have to leave their Antarctic gear behind. Angel decides to fly ahead to scout through the tunnel, and he comes across like an animal boneyard. But the bones are much too large to be from any animals living in the world today. Angel continues and finds the way out of the tunnel, but when he flies out, he heads directly into a flock of pterodactyls. And he spends some time trying to dodge them and not get eaten. Luckily, the rest of the X-Men catch up, and Scott is able to chase them away with his optic beam. And the X-Men are stunned to find themselves suddenly in a tropical land filled with animals and plants that had gone extinct in the rest of the world millennia ago. There's the pterodactyls and a couple of other types of dinosaurs, but my favorite thing was this herd of tiny little horses. They're like dog-sized, and Bobby says, "Imagine taking one of these on a walk in the park." But as they're busy admiring their discovery, they're suddenly attacked by a group of men riding large dinosaur birds and armed with slingshots. The X-Men prepare to fight, but it turns out that inside the slingshot rocks is some sort of noxious gas, and it knocks all of them out except for Beast. He tries to take them on alone while being shot at with arrows, but the men are able to grab Jean and flee with her just as the mysterious loincloth man they're looking for arrives with his saber-toothed tiger. They try to follow Jean's captors, but the men take their dino birds through a swamp and neither Beast nor his two new allies can follow. The man talks to the saber-toothed tiger and Beast realizes that the man has tamed it somehow. The rest of the team wakes up from their gas exposure and the man speaks to them, introducing himself as Kazar. Beast, forgetting all social cues whatsoever, grabs Kazar's arm to compliment his biceps, but that sets off Zabu. Iceman freezes the tiger, but that sets off Kazar. He's pissed now. He smashes the ice with a rock and tells them that to attack Zabu, they also have to face him, Zabu's blood brother. And Kazar also speaks in pretty stilted English. Scott steps in to try and calm everyone down, explaining that they need Kazar's help to find their captured friend. It does not work, and it just looks like their whole journey is just going to be them fighting Kazar with Jean taken away. But just then, another man rushes the group. Kazar stops and recognizes him and calls him Magor the Killer, last of the ape men. And Magor's carrying a club just to drive home the caveman point. I think he's supposed to be like a Neanderthal. But Kazar is able to defeat him easily and Magor runs off. Scott again pleads with Kazar to help them find Jean, and Kazar agrees, telling them that the swamp men are his enemies too. So they all rush through the jungle, running across like these enormous tree branches to cross into the swamp people's land. Angel flies off to scout and comes across a group of Brontosaurus, but as he's flying, a net is launched from the forest below and traps him. And he's now also captured by the swamp men and taken back to their village. On the positive side, he does find Jean, who's already there. Bad news is Jean tells him that the swamp men are going to sacrifice them. The swamp men end up taking Jean and Warren up the steps of a pyramid, and Warren tries to get Jean to use her powers to untie them, but she says that the ropes are covered in pitch and she can't loosen them. They arrive at the top of the flat pyramid, and at first it's just like a flat, empty space. But then the roof, or floor, I guess, splits open and two large doors rise up, and out comes a T-Rex. Jean screams and tries to run away, but Angel tells her that his ropes aren't covered in pitch and tries to get her to focus to untie him. Instead, Jean uses her powers to launch boulders at the T-Rex and then tries to push it over. She is able to succeed and the T-Rex falls down, struggling to get back up, you know, with her tiny little arms. And that gives Jean time to untie Angel and he frees her and flies them both away. Unfortunately, he was not able to do so fast enough, and the swamp men grab onto his legs as he tries to continue flying, but they end up dragging him down. In the meantime, Kazar and the rest of the X-Men have reached the swamp people's village, and it is surrounded by really tall wooden walls, so they're trying to figure out a way past it when they get spotted by the guards. Beast decides to try and climb up the side as all the swamp people are throwing rocks down at him. And then he does make it to the top and starts fighting his way through them. Scott and Kazar, though, are still on the ground. So Scott blasts a hole in the wall, but a giant sword thing comes flying through it. It's not really explained. I don't know if it was a trap. Either way, they can't really make it. Kazar tells Scott to step back, and then he lets out a scream. The comic describes it as a roar. And a large herd of mastodons come charging in and bust through the gates. Kazar has also been frequently shouting through the issue so far that he's Lord of the Jungle, and does so again here. The group manages to fight their way through and find Angel and Jean. And the Swamp Men are defeated and all is well. The team gathers around Kazar after they leave the village, and Scott calls him a true friend. But Kazar does not reciprocate. He says that their world is above and his is the jungle, and they need to go back. So the X-Men head back into the tunnel and leave the Savage Land behind. Kazar, who really doesn't want any more guests at all, orders the mastodons to seal up the tunnel so no one can make their way back. And that is our first introduction to the Savage Land. Although honestly, the X-Men really didn't learn anything at all. Why is it there? How did Kazar or the Swamp Men get to that place? And how are there real live dinosaurs? We get none of those answers here, but that is what I'm going to cover next. The Savage Land is one of my favorite places in the X-Men world. Always has been. It's like the Danger Room or the X-Mansion that just really stood out to me, especially when I was a kid. Back in the animated series, getting to see the X-Men with dinosaurs was like the greatest thing. And then there was a Sega game that my brother and I played a lot. Technically, it takes place in the Danger Room, but it puts you in the Savage Land. I loved it. It was so fun. But I don't know why, because my main memory of the game is like getting my ass beat by dinosaurs and falling over and over for Jean to rescue me. Anyway, just like with Atlantis, explaining how the Savage Land came to be requires delving into some Marvel lore and history. So, how does a tropical land filled with dinosaurs end up beneath the frozen continent of Antarctica? Aliens. Yes, aliens. So imagine for a second, you are an incredibly ancient, powerful being that resides outside the multiverse, and you are tasked with maintaining the multiverse itself. What could you possibly want? Well, if you are the Beyonders, the answer is giant zoos, or nature reserves. The Beyonders are an ancient alien race created by another powerful creation of the Celestials. Remember them, ancient cosmic beings that shattered the first universe into the multiverse. So the Celestials create a being named Kal-Hora, and Kal-Hora creates the Beyonders and gives them some of his power. So they're like the Celestials' grandkids, super powerful, incredibly ancient. After the multiverse is created through the Celestials' war, the Beyonders are tasked with maintaining it. And for the most part, they operate in the background, not really interacting too much with the inhabitants of the multiverse. Except on occasion, like when they want giant zoos. So, about 250 million years ago, the Beyonders contacted another race of aliens known as the Nuwali. We don't need to get too much into them. They're also ancient, technologically advanced, but nowhere near as powerful as the Beyonders, or especially the Celestials. But the Beyonders promise the Nuwali gold if they will create nature preserves on different planets, and they want them filled with local plants and animals. In Kazar number 34 from 1984, we learn that the Nuwali did just that, and one of these nature reserves was the Savage Land. The Nuwali gathered together the plant and animal life that inhabited Earth at the time and set it aside in the Savage Land. And so, when the comet that killed all the rest of the dinosaurs hit, the Nuwali protected the Savage Land and used volcanoes to maintain its tropical environment. And that is the briefest rundown I can give of this strange land that the X-Men explored in today's issue. A lot of other things take place there, like colonization by Atlanteans and genetic modification of hominids that lived there, but we can't get into all of that today. Instead, I want to continue with Kazar's background. He is not a mutant, as we learned, but since he makes his first appearance in an X-Men comic, I feel like he deserves some attention here. Kazar was not born in the Savage Land. Instead, he's actually English nobility. He was born Kevin Plunder, the son of Lord Robert Plunder in London. As usual, we don't get mom's name. Kevin's father was an explorer and had gone to the Savage Land on his own, where he found vibranium, or an isotope of it. I'm not, like, sciencey enough to know exactly what that means. But anyway, he finds vibranium and realizes that it's this really powerful, unique element, and unfortunately, word of his discovery leaks out, and it's now dangerous for him and his two sons to remain where they are because everybody's after his vibranium. So Lord Plunder sends Kevin's brother to live with their butler while he and Kevin go to the Savage Land, which definitely isn't going to create any daddy issues for the brother later on. Sometime later in the Savage Land, Lord Plunder was killed by one of the people that lived there, Magor, who we briefly encountered in Uncanny X-Men number 10 when Kazar fought him off. Kevin, on the other hand, does survive the encounter because Zabu, the saber-toothed tiger, saved him. And Kevin continues to live in the Savage Land alongside Zabu and came to be known by other inhabitants as Kazar, which means son of the tiger. But even Zabu's not just like any regular old saber-toothed tiger, he actually possesses like extreme intelligence due to a mutation from radiation. So unlike Beast thought, Zabu wasn't tamed, he's just a really smart tiger. Over his life, Kazar continues to make a name for himself and essentially sees himself as a protector of the Savage Land. Kicking the X-Men out somewhat unceremoniously is his way of keeping the Savage Land unaffected by the outside world. In later stories, he continues to do the same and fends off intrusions of commercial exploitation for resources. Kazar will go on to have more run-ins with other Marvel heroes and villains through the years, and later will marry an adventurer named Shanna O'Hara, and has several series chronicling his life in the Savage Land. And of course, the X-Men will return to the Savage Land and meet up with him again later. So there we have it, the backstory of the mysterious Kazar, first introduced in Uncanny X-Men number 10, and a little bit of how the Savage Land came to be. And none of this did the X-Men learn on their adventure. Obviously, the backstory is all written later, but it just drove me a little bit crazy that they just show up, start fights, and leave without gathering any information whatsoever. Like, Kazar can speak English, but they didn't ask him any questions. And it does make it easy to understand why Kazar is so against outsiders, even though he technically is one himself. But a kid raised by a genius saber-toothed tiger might get a little bit of a pass there. That is all I have for you today. Like I mentioned last time, if you're interested in Kazar, definitely check out The Trial of Kazar on the podcast Grey Malkin Lane. It covers more of his story and some of his misadventures. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you are enjoying the show, please rate it wherever you listen and send a recommendation to somebody. Next time, I will cover Uncanny X-Men number 11 and the mysterious character known as the Stranger. In the meantime, don't forget to follow the podcast on Instagram at X-Men Unraveled. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget your flu shot.